It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-a-thon.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way. It's the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, but not in a creepy way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1975 classic, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, directed by Jim Sharman and written by Richard O'Brien. I have a confession to make, first of all.
I've never seen it before?
No, I've seen the movie before. And I like...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I like a lot of the music. Although I think this is the first time, and I've watched it twice for this, in preparation for this podcast. But this is the first time that I considered the second half of the movie worth watching. And I'll explain when we get there in the plot. But, you know, other than the time warp and Sweet Transvestite and Dammit Janet, it was like, yeah, you know, those are great songs, but you know, all the rest of it is meh. But for some reason this time, because I was looking at it a little more critically, and maybe I'm just older, there's some really fun and enjoyable parts to this that I hadn't realized before.
And I think the same is true of me. I appreciate it more as I get older because I understand more of it. And also I see it. I see the greater story.
And there is a greater story.
Yes.
Yeah. And my confession is actually that I've never been to a live performance of it. Not a live performance, but, you know, to a showing of it, like a midnight showing where people do the audience participation.
Yes, where they throw the rice and the toast and the squirt guns and the, yeah.
Yeah, I had heard about that, and I thought, well, that'd be kind of fun to do someday, but nothing, no need for me to put it on the calendar, for instance. And then, and again, in preparation for this, I pulled down what's basically the audience participation script, and I think, maybe being a, you know, grumpy old man, I don't think I would actually enjoy it as much, because I'd be like, hey, I'm trying to watch a movie. Keep it down.
Yeah, I think you would. I think you have to go to the audience participation show in the spirit that you already know and love the movie by heart, and you're just becoming part of the scenery at that point. It's more of a bonding experience as fans than it is a watching of the movie.
I guess it would have to be, because there's just a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, no, because you're heckling the movie.
Yeah, all the way through, apparently. Almost every line.
Yes. It's hilarious, though. You read the script, though.
Yeah, I mean, I skimmed it. I didn't read it word for word. Once I realized I'm not going to be adding funny little comments in a 26-page participation script.
All right. Well, that's fair. I mean, it's not for everybody. And again, it's you have to be a huge, like, geeky fan like I am. And it has to be, you know, in your wheelhouse. And because, again, you're not going for the movie. You're going for the bonding experience. And it is a lot of fun. Also, it's also a lot of fun when you're, you know, intoxicated, which is usually how I've participated. So
yeah, well, no, I'm sure if you're young and want to dress up and go hang out with other weirdos, this would be the perfect way to do that.
Weirdos? Now, come on.
Well, whatever. Because it's funny. This is a movie written or produced in 1975, but it was making. It was parodying and rejoicing in movies 20 years before it.
Right.
I mean, it was already a send-up of those 50s movies.
It really was kind of a farce.
Yeah, yeah. And the guy finally remembered all those science fiction, all the science fiction double features in the drive-ins and stuff.
Yeah. It's a very nostalgic kind of setting.
Yeah, and it's also really cleverly written.
I think so, too, which I didn't appreciate until I got older.
Well, and again, with everybody, you know, if I was in a group of people who were all just doing a running commentary, I'd be like, shut up, this is a good line, knock it off. I would be the straightest white guy in the theater as far as like, everybody just stop talking for a second.
Well,
I'm very tolerant of your fishnets, but I don't like talking in movies.
You know, you almost sounded a little bit like David Lynch for a moment.
I was kind of going for a Tim Kazurinsky, but I'll take it.
Okay. Well, I haven't heard Tim Kazurinsky's voice in decades, so.
Let's just pretend he sounds like David Lynch.
Well, he actually kind of does, so you're right on.
Anyway, so, and Rocky Horror is just great. I mean, is it a Halloween movie? Nah. I mean, I guess, actually, when you think about it, the LGBT community, again, I sound like the whitest, straightest guy ever.
Because it's LGBTQ.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, anyway. Yeah, so the queers have taken over Halloween.
Well, you know, the Q is for questioning.
Oh, that's interesting. So the tent is just getting bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Also,
no pun intended. No.
Yeah, well, yeah. Anyway. Shall we start with the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yeah, well, and to finish your thought, it's not necessarily a Halloween movie, except that it tends to have a resurgence, at least for me, around Halloween, because my friends, we would watch it around Halloween because it would involve costumes, and sometimes we would incorporate it into our Halloween theme. That's why it's Halloween to me. So to me, it may not be Halloween to anybody else, but to me, it's kind of a traditional Halloween thing.
Well, and they are, you know, they are spoofing an old, and you know, it starts out as an old horror movie, like a drive-in horror movie, and then turns into a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
So it certainly fits the season.
It's kind of a double feature.
Yeah, it kind of. So, 1975, we've got the opening credits, the screen is black, and there's just a pair of lips that come on and sing the opening theme song.
This is how the message ran. Science fiction, double feature, Dr. X will build a creature. The androids fight.
Yeah, which is probably the worst part to me of this movie, watching the
lips.
It's these really close-up lips with, like, first of all, it's a little bit creepy, but also, like, the saliva, the strings of saliva just gross me out.
Oh, yeah, because it's actually somebody really, you know, singing or talking. And
right.
It kind of points back to 1975. You know, not everybody on the screen, the silver screen, had, you know, laminates on their teeth.
Nobody had veneers, and it was bad teeth, and there's saliva, and it's a big mouth. So, yeah, ick. Ick, ick.
But the song is lovely.
No, absolutely. All of the songs in this movie are fantastic. Now, there are two songs that were cut out of the main movie that most people have seen, one of which is Barry Bostwick singing, and we can talk about that later. Not really necessary. I mean, the Barry Bostwick sing song deleted doesn't add a lot, but it does kind of, it kind of leaves part of the movie. You don't understand why there's a song where it is. And we'll talk about that later, but
okay.
It would have made it seem a little more seamless in scene changes. But, and then there's a song at the end, which is only a minute and a half long, which they didn't, some versions of the movie had it and some didn't. So
I don't think the version I saw had it because I was looking at the soundtrack as we were going on. And there was one song, of course, it's not in my notes, that just wasn't on this, you know, in the movie.
The one song that was in the soundtrack that wasn't in the movie?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know about that.
we'll go through the whole thing. So now have we dispensed with the lips?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
let's dispatch with the lips.
Exactly. So the song tells you where you are. You're like in a 50s musical. And then you're at a wedding party. And of course, clever guy that I am, I'm thinking, hey, wait, is that Riff Raff in the background? Hold on, that's Tim Curry in the background. And then you realize that, okay, there's a bunch of people in the background. And if you didn't get it by watching it, when they originally go from Damn It, Janet to the criminologist, he actually shows a picture with people's heads circled.
Yeah. No, so, this movie doesn't have a lot of subtlety.
No, but that's okay because we meet Brad and Janet, and the song Damn It, Janet is hilarious.
It's probably the best song to open the movie with.
The road was long, but I ran it.
Janet.
There's a fire in my heart, and you fan it.
Janet.
If there's one fool for you, then I am it.
Janet.
I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet, I love you.
Oh.
Here's the ring to prove that I'm no joker. There's three ways that love can go. That's good, bad, or mediocre.
Ooh.
And, you know, the other thing I thought was Barry Bostwick. I guess I didn't include anybody's name so far. The two main characters are Brad Majors, played by Barry Bostwick, and Janet Weiss, played by Susan Sarandon. And, by the way, I guess I'll probably leave it for the end, but I tried to recast everybody as I'm watching the movie about who could, you know, who would be that character today, you know, 40 years later. And we'll have to see if you agree with any of it. Although you said that was blasphemy to even try.
Well, it was blasphemy to me, but I'm very actually interested to hear what your opinion is. I have not done that yet. So I have not made my list of who I'd recast this with the exception of, because I couldn't stop my brain from going forward, I thought I'd like to see Daniel Craig as Frankenfurter, but we'll get back to that.
Oh, well, that's an excellent choice. It wasn't on my list, but the reason I started my recasting process is because during Damn It, Janet, all I could see was Ben Folds singing Damn It, Janet.
Oh, no.
With those glasses on?
That would be awesome.
The hair and the glasses, except he's about a foot too short.
Well, but that, okay, but you don't need tall necessarily, but who would you have cast as Janet then?
Well, do we want to talk about it? Because I got the whole list here if we want.
Well, let's just go. I mean, let's go for it.
Okay. So I had a lot of trouble with Janet. It finally came down to a choice of two, and that was Kristen Wiig or Jeanette McCurdy. And Jeanette McCurdy is from Cat and Sam and iCarly.
Kristen Wiig would be awesome.
Okay. As Brad, I have a choice of two. Ben Folds or Pete Holmes.
Pete Holmes.
Yeah, the comedian.
Oh, okay.
He has the goofiness and the height you need.
I guess, I would suppose.
Okay. As Frank?
Yeah.
That was a hard one, too. But my first choice would be Russell Brand.
Okay, I can totally see that.
Okay, and bear with me. My second choice, Dave Grohl.
Well, that... Dave Grohl, okay.
It's something about the mouth.
I would still pick Russell Brand, but I still also think Daniel Craig would not be a bad choice.
No, but he doesn't have that mouth.
No, but he has the kind of the build, because you got to admit, Tim Curry was kind of built in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what made it so funny. I mean, he was certainly no Rocky, but...
No.
So, shall we do the rest of my list here? Magenta, only one choice, Deborah Messing.
Okay, that would be a good choice.
Columbia, only one choice. Amy Sedaris.
All right, yeah, I can go. I'm okay with that.
Okay, Riff Raff, choice of two. I think my first choice, Jason Mewes.
All right.
And my second choice, DJ Qualls.
I was actually thinking like Christopher Walken.
Yeah, yeah, Christopher Walken would do a really creepy, that's for sure, and he can dance, so.
Yeah.
Eddie? Only one choice. Jack Black.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. No. See, I was with you until then, and then I can't stand him. I think we've discussed the only movie I like Jack Black in is The Jackal.
Well, but who else is going to be Eddie? That's the thing.
Well,
because you have to have that meatloaf physique.
Judah Friedlander?
Yeah, yeah, maybe. What about Jonah Hill?
Jonah Hill could do it.
Yeah, so, okay, Dr. Scott? Only one choice. Yeah. Paul F. Tompkins.
See, but I think the alternate would have been also Crispin Glover.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely.
If you want more modern, you're right.
Okay, The Criminologist? Only one choice. Only one choice ever, forever, as far as I'm concerned. And that is, as The Criminologist, Patrick Stewart.
you win the internets for today.
Yeah, and the last one to be cast is Rocky. And that was a hard one, too, because Rocky actually was not a good actor.
He wasn't hired for his acting.
No, nor his singing, because didn't they dub him anyway?
Yes, they dubbed him. So he neither acted nor sang. He was just there to be a pretty picture.
So I had a choice of two for Rocky. And one is Mario Lopez.
And, oh, come on.
And the other, James Franco.
Okay, I can get with James Franco.
Neither of which really have, like, the physique to pull off a modern Rocky. Because you need someone with a very, like, that has to be super cut. I mean, maybe Mario, that's why I thought of Mario Lopez, because he could probably pull off the bod.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it had to be somebody with a perfect physique, yeah, you're going to have a hard sell.
Okay, well, anyway, so when I was watching this movie, that was part of what I was thinking of, especially the second time I was watching it.
Huh. I'm going to have to put that in my head and go watch it now.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I should post the pictures of all these people so people can actually see how it would work, how I got it in my head.
Maybe do a side-by-side.
Yeah, of everybody on the day that this comes out, which I guess would be maybe Wednesday.
So I'm looking at the soundtrack. Planet Hot Dog. I don't remember what song Planet Hot Dog.
Yeah, that's not in the movie that I can tell.
And Once in a While, I don't think is in the movie either.
No.
But I don't know what Planet Hot Dog is. I don't even remember it. Once in a While, I remember, but Planet Hot Dog, I'll have to.
Back to the movie. Now we've gone through, we got the opening song, which I love the line, by the way, Anne Francis stars in Forbidden Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of those lines of convenience.
They just needed to get a rhyme in there and it just happened to fit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in this, but I think it's all done knowingly.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's done purposely to be like, ha-ha.
Now, we have Barry Bostwick and we have Susan Sarandon. And Susan Sarandon is so funny. I mean, Barry Bostwick does a great job, too. But, you know, Susan Sarandon has had the bigger career. But even...
Well, Barry Bostwick's still around.
Oh, yeah. But you would be surprised to have Susan Sarandon show up in your Lifetime TV movie. You would not be surprised if Barry Bostwick goes in your Lifetime TV movie.
That's a true statement.
So, anyway, did you recognize the criminologist, Charles Gray?
He looks familiar.
Yeah, that's because he was Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, yeah. I should have recognized that.
He was also in another Bond movie, You Only Live Twice, where Donald Pleasance played Blofeld, and he played a guy named Henderson.
Yeah, I knew he was familiar. Sometimes it's really hard because, you know, now I'm watching so many movies that it's
oh, yeah. No, this is not a gotcha. I'm not doing one of those Katie Kirk trick questions on you.
No, I didn't. I read all kinds of things.
I read everything.
Yeah.
So we have the newly engaged couple, Brad and Janet, who find themselves lost and with a flat tire on a cold and rainy, it says late November evening, so I guess it's not Halloween. And interestingly, on the radio is Richard Nixon's resignation speech.
Which is funny.
Yeah. So then the song Over at the Frankenstein Place comes on. And we get to the Frankenstein place, although the person who lives there is not named Frankenstein. That's anyway. So they just need to make a telephone call to get someone to come out and help them. So they walk to this castle and they discover a whole group of strange and outlandish people who are holding an annual Transylvanian convention. So Riff Raff, this is where you meet Riff Raff, who is Richard O'Brien, who wrote this thing. That's how he got in the movie. Although he did such a great job. And I love how when Brad says that this must be a hunting lodge for rich weirdos, Riff Raff closes the door and then kind of winks at him as he leads them into the house. And then we have the Time Warp. And I love the Time Warp song.
It's just a jump to the left. Your hands on your hips.
Catchy, and it has a good hook, and it has its own dance move.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's fun to see the dancing, but it's really, you know, it's got a, yeah, it's got a nice hook. It's got guitars in it, so it gets...
And it explains to you the dance move.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It tells you what to do.
Exactly, yeah, and anybody can do it. So, yeah. In my notes, I put, is there any better song in any musical ever? And then I put, oh wait, yes, the next one.
How'd you do, I see you've met my faithful hand in hand. He's just a little broad dime, because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't
judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Let me show you a rhyme to maybe play you a sign. You look like you're both pretty groovy. Or if you want something visual that's not too abysmal, we could take in an old Steve Reeves movie.
I'm glad we caught you at home. Could we use your phone? We're both in a bit of a hurry.
Right.
We'll just say where we are, then go back to the car.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Dr. Fulton.
We don't want to be any worry.
Well, you got caught with a flat world. How about that? Well, babies, don't you panic. By the light of the night, it'll all seem all right. I'll get you a satanic mechanic. I'm just a sweet transvestite.
Sweet Transvestite is a fantastic song, and it's all the performance of Tim Curry.
The music, hearing the song, Sweet Transvestite's a great song, but if you haven't heard the song, watching his performance, you have missed a great opportunity, because you miss, it does get lost in translation.
Oh, and just his, you know, his makeup and wardrobe, and the way, you know, the accent that he uses, I thought it was a little like, although I think I read somewhere, he took it off like a parody of High English, like how people would try a High English accent, pretending they were the Queen or something.
Yeah.
I got a little Mark Bolan T-Rex from it.
Just like a car, you're pleasing to behold.
It's something about the way Tim Curry says, like, round and sound.
His facial expressions also make part of it, because he has these sinister, these great goofy grins and these just lurid looks that are awesome.
Well, that's why I think you have to have a Russell Brand or a Dave Grohl, somebody who can actually unhinge their jaw, because he uses his own ability like that to great effect. He's got such a big, expressive face. Like, I suppose Jim Carrey could do it, but I don't think he has the right shape of face.
Ugh. I need a shower now. Jim Carrey. Ugh.
Soon, Brad and Jen are swept into the world of Dr. Frank N. Furter, Tim Curry, a self-proclaimed sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Which, by the way, transsexual comma Transylvania is apparently a place, and we learn a little bit later what that place is. But I don't think they were ever suggesting that he was a transsexual. He's just from transsexual Transylvania. We've already met
a transvestite.
Yes, oh, without a doubt. And we have Riff Raff, Richard O'Brien, which we talked about earlier, his sister Magenta, portrayed by Patricia Quinn, and then a groupie named Columbia, Nell Campbell, Little Nell. I did a little YouTube poking around about Little Nell.
Yeah. Did you find some of her other songs?
Yeah, and they're not great. I think she does a song called Do the Swim.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
I see, I have, because my brother is 1 year for Christmas, bought me the anniversary set of Rocky Horror. It came with the movie and 4 CDs. So I have the alternate tracks, including Tim Curry singing songs that aren't from Rocky Horror and her singing songs that aren't from Rocky Horror.
Oh, well,
songs from the vault, it's called. So like Tim Curry singing a song called Biting My Nails.
That sounds a little creepy.
Yeah. I should send it to you so you can listen to it.
Oh yeah, or bring it with on Christmas.
I can do that.
Yeah. So, Frank introduces the couple to himself and his guests and claims to have discovered the secret of life itself. And he's made himself a man. And he's created Rocky, played by Peter Hinwood. And his creation is brought to life. And that's when they play the Sword of Damocles and I Can Make You a Man.
The Charles Atlas song.
Yes.
Eat nutritious, high protein, and swallow raw eggs. Try to build up his shoulders, his chest, arms, and legs. Such an effort, if he only knew of my plan. In just 7 days, I can make you a man. He'll do press-ups and chin-ups, do the smirch, clean and jerk. He thinks dynamic tension must be hard work. Such strenuous living, I just don't understand. When in just 7 days, oh baby, I can make you a man.
And there's a lot of, well, between this and the next couple of scenes, actually the whole movie has a lot of Benny Hill kind of action where people chasing each other around. And I'm sure on stage it looks great too, you know, as a play.
Yeah.
So anyway, soon their celebration is interrupted by Eddie, played by Meatloaf, who is an ex-delivery boy, former lover of both Frank and Columbia, as well as a partial brain donor to Rocky.
As it turns out.
And he rides out of his deep freeze on a motorcycle and sings Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul. Much to Columbia's delight.
Whatever happened to Saturday night? When you left the job and you felt all right. It don't seem the same since Cosmic Light came into my life.
Because he's been in deep freeze up until now.
Yeah, and she's happy to see him, and, you know, it's all very great. He's the love of her life. But Frank is jealous, and so Frank kills him with an ice axe.
Yeah, kind of brutally, disproportionately brutally.
Yeah, he's not fooling around. He is, it's not, his jaw is not the only thing that's unhinged on Miss Dr. Furter. And this is where this is where the movie I think before had sort of lost me, because there's the whole I can make you a man reprise, and there's, you know, this whole thing about him and Rocky and all this stuff. And this is, I think, the first time that I focused on what a tragic character Frank is. Frank wants to be something, and he's not quite confident enough to pull it off.
He's trying for his true love, and he tried with Eddie and it didn't work, and so he figured his way to get true love was to make true love.
Yeah, but that doesn't work either, because Rocky is terrified and doesn't seem to be in any way attracted to Frank.
Well, it's quite an entrance in delivery.
Yeah. So, anyway, Brad and Janet are then shown to separate bedrooms, where each is visited and seduced by Frank, who poses as Brad when visiting Janet, and Janet when visiting Brad.
Which is also hilarious.
Oh, absolutely. And then Janet, who's upset and emotional, by the way, all plots are provided by WikiLeaks. Oh my God. By Wikipedia. Wikipedia. Almost right. So Janet wanders off looking for Brad, who she discovers on a television monitor is in bed with Frank. And then she discovers Rocky, who's cowering in his birth tank, hiding from Riff Raff, who's been tormenting him. And then while tending his wounds, Janet becomes intimate with Rocky, as Magenta and Columbia watch with, again, perverse delight from their bedroom monitor. And we hear the song, Touch-a-touch-a-touch-me, which is a great song.
I was feeling done in, couldn't win. I'd only ever kissed before.
You mean she...
I thought there's no use getting into heavy petting. It only leads to trouble and seat wetting. Now all I want to know is how to go. I've tasted blood and I want more.
More, more, more.
I'll put up no resistance. I want to stay the distance. I've got an itch to scratch. I need assistance. Touch, 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 touch me. I wanna be dirty. Throw me, chill me, fulfill me. Reach out the night.
It's funnier in Latin, by the way, in Spanish.
There's a Spanish version?
I have a Spanish version, yes. I have the international version of the soundtrack. So I have different tracks from different countries.
That must be quite confusing.
It's hilarious. No, you know exactly, but it's anyway, it's one of those, if you have it, listen to it, because you will, I have listened to it and laughed and laughed and laughed, because I'm 12 years old.
Cuéntanoslo todo, Chelo. ¿Cuánto tiempo perdí? Me resistí a lo que era un beso, no sabía.
¿Estás hablando en serio?
¿Cómo iba yo a dejarme de nadie apapacharme? Y a casa regresaba acelerada. Ahora quiero saber el ABC.
Okay, well, I'm going to resist the urge to try to make any jokes in foreign languages or foreign accents, because A, I can't do accents, and B, I don't want to be perceived as racist.
Yes, that's probably wise.
So, anyway, after discovering that his creation is missing, Frank returns to the lab with Brad and Riff Raff, where Frank learns that an intruder has entered the building. Brad and Janet's old high school science teacher, Dr. Everett Scott, has come looking for his nephew, Eddie. Frank suspects that Dr. Scott investigates UFOs for the government. This is where it turns into a science fiction double feature. Upon learning of Brad and Janet's connection to Dr. Scott, Frank suspects them of working for him. They're moles. Frank, Dr. Scott, Brad, and Riff Raff then discover Janet and Rocky together under the sheets in Rocky's birth tank, which upsets Frank and Brad. And just about when that is going to come to a violent confrontation, Magenta interrupts him by sounding a massive gong saying that dinner is prepared. So they're all sitting around the dinner table, and that's when we realize that the meat they're eating has been prepared from Eddie's remains. And that's where...
kind of macabre.
Oh, totally. And that's where the song Eddie comes in.
Eddie's Teddy.
Bye.
body must have been drawn into something, making him warn me in a note which reads,
"What's it say?
What's it say?
I'm out of my head. Oh, hurry, or I may be dead. Save the suit, carry out there,
be no need." Baby, said if he didn't like his terror, you knew he'd give up a no good kid. But then he threatened your life with a switchblade knife.
What a god!
Makes you cry.
And I did.
Then Janet runs screaming into Rocky's arms and is slapped and chased through the halls of the castle by a jealous Frank. And that's when you have the lovely Planet Schmanet Janet.
Which is a great song.
I'll tell you once, I'll tell you twice. You better wise up, Janet Weiss. Your apple pie don't taste too nice. You better wise up, Janet Weiss.
So, Janet, Brad, Dr. Scott, Rocky, and Columbia all meet in Frank's lab, where Frank captures them with the Medusa transducer and transforms them into statues. Very, by the way, flattering to them statues.
Yes, because they're naked statues.
Yeah, and again, they're probably a lot more flattering than these people are in real life.
Right, well-endowed naked statues.
Of course. Anyway,
Except very possibly, like, tighty-whities were gigantic in the beginning of the movie.
I know, it's hilarious. So, anyway, actually, you know what? Let's put a pin in this and stop it for just about a minute. I'll be right back. And we're back.
I'm just listening to tracks, because apparently I'm listening to the original UK soundtrack. So it's different actors singing, but Tim Curry was involved. So it's Tim Curry singing a different, not quite the Frankenfurter we know from America, but still Planet Hot Dog.
Okay.
Is after Planet Schmanet. Planet Hot Dog is that whole, you know, you're a hot dog, but you better not try to hurt her Frankfurter song.
Oh, okay.
So that, I guess that makes sense, but just an odd song. Anyway.
And what's that other one?
So Brad sings Once in a While, and it's right after Susan Sarandon. Well, in the movie, I think it was supposed to be right before Susan Sarandon sings Touch It, Touch It, Touch Me. Either right before or right after. In the UK version, it's right after that song. But it's Brad's kind of, you know, he's kind of sad. So there's kind of a Susan Sarandon and then a Brad, or a Janet and then a Brad song.
Well, Janet is actually, you know, the Touch a Touch a Touch Me is actually Janet experiencing something wonderful.
Right. And then it's kind of the Once in a While is kind of Brad kind of having some regret.
For sleeping with Frankenfurter?
Right. And also lamenting that, you know, she's the one for him. And,
you know, when Frank visits Janet, they don't actually do anything. But when Frank visits Brad, they actually, you know, at least I think Janet and Frank didn't do anything. But,
well, I don't know. I think the implication is they did do something.
Oh, well, maybe. I got the impression, though, that she and Rocky were experiencing something for the first time.
Well, she and Rocky were doing it for the first time, but not...
Not her first time.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's we don't have maybe, to go that I deep. Know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how deep Rocky went.
Yeah. So back to Planet Hot Dog?
Well, that's Planet Hot Dog.
Yeah, that's that was that Rocky joke. Anyway, so after they're turned into statues, they're all carted into the... Like, it's the main room where they are forced to perform a live cabaret floor show with Frank as the leader. And this is where, again, this is where, you know, Frank is sort of comes off a little bit of as like a megalomaniac, but he's not. He's just trying to find a way to try and find love and to be himself, you know, to be it.
Well,
don't dream it, as you will.
Right. It's very much a, it's all about him though, still.
Yes.
But he just wants everybody to love him.
Of course. Isn't that what we all want?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't, maybe not. Yeah, but he's, of course, just, you know. Just,
for me, I just want it with less transvestitism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, whatever makes you happy, you know.
Whatever happened to Fay Wray? That delicate satin-draped frame, as it clung to her thigh, how I started to cry, 'cause I wanted to be dressed just the same. Give yourself over to absolute pleasure. Swim the warm waters of sins of the flesh. Erotic nightmares beyond any measure. And sensual daydreams to treasure forever. Can't you just see it? Oh, oh, oh. Oh! Don't dream it. Be it. Don't dream it. Be it, don't dream it. Be it, don't dream it. Be it,
don't dream it. Be
So this lovely cabaret floor show where they're all in they're all dressed up like Frank, including in a funny turn the doctor, Dr. Scott, I mean.
Yeah.
And they have the three songs in a row, ending with Wild and Untamed Thing, and then their performance is interrupted by Riff Raff and Magenta, who, as far as I'm concerned, are wearing the best costumes in the entire movie.
Yeah, no, they really win the movie at that point. I thought that too. I thought, genius. This is just genius costumes.
Oh, yeah. And they reveal.
And the hair, by the way. Riff Raff's hair.
Well, Magenta's hair, too.
Yeah, yeah. But the one, like, the weird alfalfa-esque, you know, this strand of hair whipped over the back.
Yeah, I'm sure many college professors have used that look to great advantage.
I think we both had a trig teacher that kind of did that in a different method.
That was a whole different deal. Anyway, so yeah, Riff Raff and Magenta reveal themselves and Frank to all be aliens from the planet Transsexual in the galaxy of Transylvania. And they stage a coup and announce a plan to return to their home world. And then we have the song I'm Going Home.
On the day I went away,
goodbye
was all I had to say.
Now I
want to come again and stay.
Oh, my, my.
Smile, and that will mean I may. 'Cause I've seen, oh, blue skies through the tears in my eyes, and I realize I'm going home.
Which is a gut-wrenching, sad, just, it's a tearjerker.
Well, that's why I wrote down that Frank was a really tragic character. But I also like that Magenta yawns during the the very touching number.
Yes.
So, you know, in the process, they end up killing Columbia, Rocky, and Frank, who all have failed the mission. And I love the whole King Kong scene with Rocky and Frank at the end.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice little touch to the old classic movie.
Well, especially because, you know, he says, you know, the line is, whatever happened to Fay Wray?
Exactly. So they end up releasing Brad, Janet, and Dr. Scott, and then they depart by lifting off in the castle itself. And that's when they play superheroes.
Yes.
And the survivors are left crawling in the dirt. And the narrator concludes that the human race is equivalent to insects crawling on the planet's surface. By the way, do you remember that globe that we had?
Yes.
Yeah, we had that globe, people.
We did. It's an awesome globe.
Yes. And then they play the science fiction double feature reprise and roll credits. And you realize that if you were at home watching this, you just had a wonderful experience. And I think if you were at the theater watching this, you would be, I guess, continuing on your night of debauchery. And some poor schmuck will have to clean up that theater of your rice and toast and shit.
Yeah. Oh, come on. You never had to clean out a theater in your life.
Oh, no, not at all. I just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Who cleaned out theaters?
Yeah, that would be you. You were the floor monitor.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
I'm sorry. Floor supervisor. Cleaning up the damn floor.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Sanitation manager.
Where you spend half the time cleaning up the floor and the other half watching your shoes melt off your feet.
Yeah, that was a job. Let me tell you, it was a job. I'll go over my notes. I think it's funny that the narrator in the beginning of the movie calls this the Denton Affair, because that sets up, you know, there's a sequel to this movie, right?
Well, I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
It's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. There are a couple people that make Richard O'Brien comes back. Little Nell comes back. And I think there's one other actress that comes back. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's don't watch it. Don't watch it. Don't watch it.
Well,
watch
but it. There's a, you know, in the Damn It Janet scene, or just before the Damn It Janet scene, there's when Brad is talking to Janet and they propose, they're in front of a billboard that says Denton, where happiness is, or something. Where happiness lives.
Yes.
The home of happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I actually have the soundtrack, by the way, to Shock Treatment. And so there are several songs from Shock Treatment. And Denton is one of them. There is one good song from the soundtrack of Shock Treatment, and it's Little Black Dress.
Ever since I was a little boy, dressing up has always been my greatest joy. But when it's time to be discreet, there's one thing you just can't beat.
And that's a strapless, backless, classical little black dress. Well, first you go rip, rip, rip. Then you go snip, snip, snip. Then you whip it a zip, zip, zip. And split it up to the hip, hip, hip. And as you strip, 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 for that soft caress as you slip, flip, flip into that little black dress.
I won't go into the plot of Shock Treatment. It's just bad. It's just a bad movie. And I should go back and rewatch it sometime, but I will have to not be sober for that. So when Janet starts saying in the beginning over at the Frankenstein place, she says, in the velvet darkness. What is the velvet darkness?
I don't know.
Okay, just a thought. Okay. I also observed that Susan Sarandon has the facial expressions down in this movie, because she has some of the best, like, she rolls her eyes at Brad, or she just guffaws. I mean, she clearly, even being as young as she was, she had the facial expressions. She was on top of that. But then I thought, oh, God, it's definitely the 70s, because there's a tap dancing little Nell.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and the tap dancing. But then I also observed Janet faints a lot in this movie.
Well, that's a very 50s movie kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, but actually, you know what I thought of? It was not in my notes, but I was watching it just prior to recording tonight. And I tried to play Time Warp for my daughter, who didn't dig it at all.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, she's probably still a little too young.
Yeah, well. But what I thought was when I watched them do the Time Warp, the people dancing inside, I thought, first of all, one guy, I'm like, how did they get Dave Matthews, violin player, in this movie?
Well, and I also thought at one point I wrote down, is that Paul Rubens in the background as an extra?
I mean,
because in the when they're in the laboratory upstairs in the background, I swear one of the guys is Paul Rubens.
That's funny.
I also put Barry Boswick. Sure, he whips his glasses off in anger.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's great.
And also that. The birthday tag to Rocky on his pommel horse or whatever it was.
Oh.
It looks like to me it was the precursor of Happy Bunny.
I don't think I've seen Happy. Oh, like the little stickers Happy Bunny?
Yeah.
First of all, yeah, the pommel horse I thought was weird, that one limp end on it. I don't know what that was all about.
Well, it's phallic is what it was.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, and he certainly... Oh, he totally
yeah,
he was
humping it at one point.
Oh yeah, he was. He's the original grinder.
Ride the pony.
Yes.
And then I also put, oh dear, there's a sax solo. That's always the bane of my existence is the sax solo, because Meatloaf has the sax solo. Eddie has the sax solo. But then also, so when they're all at the table eating dinner, or as they're preparing dinner, I said, I need an electric carving knife at the table to stop arguments of unworthy conversation. I think that's a great tool.
I love that carving knife. It was so funny and loud.
I think we grew up with that carving knife.
Oh, we totally did. Yeah.
I think they still have it.
I'm pretty sure. There probably hasn't been a lot of electric carving knife technology changes.
Yeah. I mean, I have an electric carving knife myself that's very similar, but not quite as big. It's more a little more compact because it's bought within the last 20 years.
Yeah, too funny, though. I like the fact that around dinner, they all had different cups, too, like a makeshift kind of thing.
Well, the whole table was kind of mishmash.
Yeah, which is just fun. And unaddressed, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, and the riffraff was just like pouring wine all over the table, really.
Yeah. Turns out he's not a great manservant.
This is true.
So,
And to harken back to... you know, the opening where Nixon is in the car, to, you know, maybe we should have probably opened the housekeeping this to, you know, a sad day because we lost Ben Bradley today.
Oh, that's horrible.
Did you not know that?
I did not know that. I know he was sick.
Yeah, he passed away today. So,
oh, well,
kind of sad for me, but I'm glad we've discussed him because we talked about all the president's men.
Yeah, well, and as the great Greg Proops would say, Ben Bradley is floating in the heavens among the stars.
Is he floating or swirling in the
Maybe
heavens?
Maybe swirling, yeah. He probably says swirling. He's a swirling kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yes, he's straight. Sure he's straight and makes no case for it.
Barry will be yelling at the podcast right now. Hi, Barry.
He'll be yelling because I misquoted Greg Proops.
Maybe, but because he turned me on to Greg Proops, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, Greg Proops is amazing.
So, anyway, a great movie. It's a great soundtrack. It's a great combo. If you have opportunity to go watch, like, the UK version, I don't know that there's a version of the UK video that exists, but I'm going to look for it.
It seems like this would be in various forms on YouTube, right?
I'm sure, but I don't have the heart to look because I'm afraid of what I might find.
Well, yeah, and there's going to be different levels of performance. I mean, I can't see anybody but Tim Curry playing the Frankenfurter role for real. Because he's got everything.
Yeah, it'll be hard if they ever do redo it. But, you know, I'm surprised it hasn't been redone, considering how much money it has to have made now.
Well,
is the kitchen cult value.
I'm just telling you, if we could put together the Kristen Wiig, Pete Holmes, you know, Deborah Messing, Amy Sedaris, Russell Brand, Ben Folds, if Pete Holmes is not available.
We just need one of those people's Facebook pages or Twitter pages, and to tweet that to them or put it on one of their Facebook pages and say, we have this idea. It's your idea. It's in the ether. Do with it what you want.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll see if we can get some traffic.
Yeah. Are we done with the movie?
I think so. I love this movie. I mean, actually, I liked it a lot better this time all the way through. Like I said, but I've always liked the first half of this movie, pretty much everything up through Hot Patootie. But now I like it all the way through. Soup to nuts, if you pardon the expression.
I think if you go into it thinking that it's a kind of a tragic love story, then it makes more sense.
Yeah.
You have arrived. You've earned your toast.
Well, thank you. Well, my luck, my squirt gun to leak all over my pocket.
Although poor Peter Hinwood, who did this movie and did a couple of things, and was like, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that he was hired for one specific reason.
Yeah, because he was built like a brick shit house.
Yeah. Well, and this actually made me look up Steve Reeves also.
Okay.
You know, because they, if they wanted something visual that's not too abysmal, they'd
take a Steve Reeves movie.
Yeah, Steve Reeves played Hercules in like the 1950s movies. He's a bodybuilder and actor.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. As always, send feedback to show at notinacreepyway.com. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Hey, write a review. Give us 5 stars. We'd appreciate it. You can also listen on Stitcher Radio. If you have a suggestion for a movie for us to talk about, send it to movie@notinacreepyway.com. We like feedback. We want to hear from you.